Thank you for joining us for ACT, No Matter What, the Planned Parenthood Advocates of Arizona podcast. And now, your host, Ethan Cox, Director of Development.
Hello, and thank you so much for joining us for another Planned Parenthood Advocates of Arizona ACT No Matter What podcast. We have got probably our biggest star guest to date today. We're going to be speaking with Arizona Secretary of State Katie Hobbs, and I think it's going to be a really, really great conversation. Before we get into it, I'm going to do a short intro of Secretary Hobbs, and then we'll start the Q&A. Arizona Secretary of State Katie Hobbs has led a life of service, beginning as a volunteer at her church and continuing with her job as a social worker and chief compliance officer at one of the largest domestic violence centers in the U.S. The focus of her life has been to help others to gain security, to be heard, and to create better lives. That fundamental motivation inspired her to run for Secretary of State after serving in the Arizona House of Representatives and Arizona Senate as Minority Leader. Now she brings her years of experience to the office of the Secretary of State to ensure that it runs productively and that Arizona elections are secure, fair, and efficient. Secretary Hobbs has a Bachelor of Social Work from Northern Arizona University and a Master of Social Work from Arizona State University. She has been a professional social worker since 1992. Prior to being elected to the legislature, she worked in the areas of domestic violence, behavioral health, and homelessness. She's been honored with dozens of awards for her service. Most recently, she was named the League of Cities and Towns Legislative Champion for two consecutive years, in 2017 and 2018. Secretary Hobbs met her husband at church in 1992, and they live in Phoenix with their two kids, Hannah and Sam, and their dog and cats. Welcome, Secretary Hobbs. So happy to have you on the show today.
Hi, happy to be here.
So let's just kick it off. And I think something that's been on the top of mind for a lot of people is the 2020 election, believe it or not. And rumor has it that the election is over and decided. However, you've been forced to speak out about the election security as recently as February, as several new bills that have been introduced in the state Congress would seek to limit voter access. Of the many bills introduced, which is the most harmful, and do any of these bills really stand a chance of becoming law?
We are still dealing with election aftermath already here in March. So yeah, it is kind of the election that never ends. And what we saw following the election, which has been really harmful, is a lot of legislators undermining the election that we had. I mean, we really should be celebrating. This was one of the most successful had the highest voter turnout that we've seen in our state. And instead of celebrating, you know, people are continuing to spread baseless conspiracy theories about it and use that to justify legislation that will really curtail access to the ballot. And, you know, this kind of legislation is not new in Arizona. It certainly is a lot more extreme this year than we've seen in the past. But the justification for this kind of legislation is what's really concerning. And the legislators who spread the conspiracy theories and lies are now saying that that's the reason we have to do these things to help restore voters' confidence, when they're actually the ones who helped undermine the voter confidence by participating in this conspiracy circus, is what I've been calling it. So there are a lot of concerning bills. A couple that are moving that people should really pay attention to. One of them would allow for, or it would require the counties to purge people off of the permanent early voter list, even if they participated in the election, but they chose not to use their mail-in ballot in that election. So So that's very, very concerning. It basically takes the permanent out of permanent early voter list. And then the other bill would severely limit the period for early voting. Right now, Arizonans enjoy 27 days of voting. Early ballots get mailed out and early voting starts 27 days prior to election day. And they have all that time to return those mail-in ballots. Ballots can be received up until the close of polls at 7 p.m. on election day. And as long as they're received by then, they're counted. And this bill would roll that back to 22 days before the election and then require that mail-in ballots be postmarked by the Thursday before the election. So that really limits the amount of time people have to vote their ballots at home. And it's really problematic in areas that are underserved by the mail and they don't have access to the mail like a lot of us in urban areas do.
Right. And I think a lot of us in those urban areas tend to forget sometimes that there's a great number of Arizonans that live in very rural areas and that their access to voting is just as vital as those of us that are living in Phoenix, Tucson, or Flagstaff. The bills always strike me as oddly kind of funny in that, you know, it's as though, you know, I were to go and start a fire and then come in and say, hey, let's find some way to start a law so that I don't go and start any more fires. When really these, you know, things are just, you know, crazy red herrings that are kind of being thrown out there. Kind of along that same line, there's an old saying that a lie can travel halfway around the world while the truth is putting on its shoes. And this seems to be truer now than ever. What do you think that you and other elected officials can do to combat this?
Yeah, that is exactly the case and what we've seen with a lot of this election misinformation. And unfortunately, social media just amplifies the speed with which this kind of misinformation can spread. So we started off the 2020 election year working with colleagues across the country, other secretaries of state and the National Association of Secretaries of State, along with CISA, the Election Infrastructure Security Agency, and really we're promoting the Trusted Info 2020 campaign, which really would put emphasis on voters getting their election information from those trusted election officials. And you know, a lot of times people share information, they have good intentions, but it's just wrong information. So just really making sure that they're getting their information from the source and from those local and state election officials. And so we did that knowing that misinformation was going to be a huge part of this election and that we were going to have to combat a lot of that. That was certainly exacerbated by COVID and the challenges presented by that in terms of conducting the election. But then also we saw the attacks on the Postal Service, and there was just undermining of trust in the Postal Service and their ability to deliver election mail and meet the demands of increased voting by mail in a lot of other states. And so, so we invested a lot of resources up front in that campaign and ended up having almost $5 million in grant funding to provide our public education campaign. And fortunately, following the election, we still had some resources left, and we continued to put out videos, like little explainer videos that kept voters informed and sort of demystified the process of everything that was happening after the election in terms of tabulation and audits and things like that. And so I think, you know, in conversations I've had with other secretaries and other election officials since the election, that, you know, that truth telling, which is just, it's such a simple answer, but we have to keep telling the truth. And election information that's coming from anywhere else is simply not true. And I think most people know that. I think there's people that are still buying into the big lie, and those people are probably not going to believe me when I tell the truth. And that's, you know, whatever. But the election officials in our country are telling the truth about what happened in the election and what continues to happen in terms of voting processes and information that voters need to know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's wise to remember that's not just Democrat Secretary of State. That's also the Republican Secretary of State that have also definitely taken a stand. Mm-hmm. Speaking of your counterparts in other states, I know you've had an incredibly difficult, you know, past 12 months, many receiving threats of violence and having horrible lies told about you. How do you help your staff and colleagues during what is unnecessarily a really rough time?
Yeah, you know, it's been really challenging. And I think one of the long-term concerns I have as a result of all of this that you've mentioned is that we will lose really qualified election workers. I mean, election administration is a very specialized area. And I don't think we have enough emphasis put on, you know, getting the right people into those roles, but then certainly developing that as a profession. And I think now we're going to suffer some attrition because of all of this. But what I will say is that in our office, we have an incredible team, and they dealt with all of the barrage of stuff coming in, either insults or harassment or threats through email, through phone calls, and they dealt with it. And we continued to, you know, boost them up and provide, you know, sort of support. There's a lot of humorous conversations going on to help deal with that. And then also, we also did get such an outpouring of support from around the country. I have a stack of cards and letters on my desk that I regularly send photos of the growing stack to the Elections Department team and invite them to come and produce them when they're in the office. Just to know that I think that those cards and letters speak volumes over the other negative stuff that's coming in.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful. That's really nice. There's no doubt a lot of darkness in the world right now, but I see a lot of hope too. And I think that's the hopelessly optimistic fundraiser in me. So watching thousands of young people come together in protest, whether it was at one of the recent women's marches or the incredible folks who came out in dozens of cities last summer to protest the murder of George Floyd. For all of those young folks seeking dramatic systemic change, what advice would you offer?
Well, I would say don't get discouraged, because the kind of change that a lot of folks are so hungry for is really, when it happens at the government level, it's very incremental. It's really hard to get big, dramatic changes at the government level. But that doesn't minimize the importance of the activism to try to make those changes happen. I think any positive change that we've seen, really, it's not coming from elected officials. It's coming from pressure on elected officials by their constituents to take the right positions. I mean, look at gay marriage. That was one of the quickest turnarounds in terms of, you know, support. And it came from this same kind of activism. And so not saying that all of the turnarounds are going to be as quick as that, but it's a good example of how it worked to change hearts and minds and get good policy passed. Obviously, we still have a lot of ways to go in terms of equality, but you know, that's just one example. So don't give up. Your voice really, really matters. And what you're doing in terms of activism is really important, and it will help change the conversation.
Yeah, I think the example that you cite with same-sex marriage is really vital, because it's a great recent example. And a lot of us had been in that struggle literally for decades, and the rapidity with how things kind of unfolded all of a sudden was just amazing to watch. And I think, you know, it changed our society for the better forever. So, you know, I love putting that up as, you know, this can be tough, and it can be a struggle, but at the end of that tunnel, there is a lot of light. So I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you the next question, considering this is a Planned Parenthood podcast. You've consistently sought and celebrated the endorsement of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Arizona. Why is that so important to you?
Well, so I came to elected office working in the area of domestic violence. And I think it was surprising to some people, but not to me, having worked in that field, that there is a strong connection between reproductive rights and reproductive reproductive coercion is a big part of some abusers, what they do to control and manipulate their victims. And so I came from that perspective. But when I got to the legislature, I just was like stunned at how extreme some of the proposals were. And I just thought, well, I mean, it can't get any worse. And then it kept getting worse. And so I really, for a while, I was the loudest voice, the leading voice in those reproductive battles on the House and Senate floor. And that was sometimes lonely. And having Planned Parenthood there, it's, to me, it was never just an endorsement. It was, we're partners in this fight. And, you know, for the same reason, I ran for Secretary of State, because I think all of these legislative battles, like reproductive rights and everything else, really comes down to the right to vote and having access to the ballot. And so it is so closely connected to me. Our ability to have a voice in our government comes from our right to vote. And I know from spending 8 years in the legislature that the legislature is not reflective of the population, and that we can do better if we make sure that more people get to vote. And so that is all completely connected. And I think it's really interesting right now what we're seeing, that Arizona is closer than we've ever been in terms of, I mean, for a long time, in terms of legislative margins. And yet we're seeing much more extreme proposals than we've seen in a long time. And voters are paying attention to that. And I think that the work that Planned Parenthood has done, their legislative champions over the years, that's going to have an impact in the next election.
No doubt. Well, and for all of the women in my life that I love and adore, I thank you for being that lone voice, because I, you know, even though I know that it can be lonely out there fighting for reproductive rights and justice, it means so much, so much. So I'm sure I don't have to tell you, but Arizona has a significant race on the ballot next year with the governor's seat coming open. Is the 2022 election something you are already working on? I gotta imagine it is. I mean, with Governor Ducey terming out and Senator Mark Kelly up for election again, are you looking forward to some record-breaking turnout numbers?
I hope so. I mean, we're going to continue to do our work in the Secretary of State's office to make sure that voters can register. We're constantly trying to improve that process and make registration more accessible. And we will continue the work that we did in the 2020 election to make sure that the election is accessible. It's a midterm election. That midterm is typically brutal on the party that holds the White House, especially the first midterm of their term. But we're going to continue to do what we can to increase voters' access. And I think that, you know, the extremism that I mentioned that we're just seeing this year is going to have impact on voters. Voters are paying attention, I think, more so now because the legislature is harder to access just because of COVID. And so I'm committed to making sure that the things that we did to make the election more accessible because of the pandemic are not the exceptions, but they're the rules. And we're going to do our part to make sure that voters can turn out. And that is not a partisan. That is not partisan. That is me doing my job as the chief election official of the state. And I think that helps the party with the best ideas. So that's my thoughts on the 2022 election. Certainly, we are already starting to prepare in terms of updating the election procedures manual. And we have put forward legislation that would clean up some election administration issues that we encountered, you know, in the first election of my term. So we're already focused on what needs to be done next year.
Yeah, that's music to my ears, especially for someone who's still experiencing some trauma from the 2010 midterm election. So
That was when I was elected. It was a super minority. It was crazy.
It was very crazy. And I'll never forget Barack Obama coming out and saying, oh, we took a shellacking.
Yeah.
So with such a stressful job, how do you make sure that you're practicing self-care? And what are the things that bring you joy and allow you to disconnect from your work?
I do a lot of outdoor activity, and that's especially helpful right now, you know, because gyms are open, but I don't know if they should be open, and I'm not going to my gym, but I hike a lot. I do a lot of biking. I got a kayak. So make sure that I'm spending a lot of time. Arizona is so beautiful, and it's really a shame for people who don't get out and enjoy that.
We truly live in just one of the greatest states. I believe that so much. Thank you so much, Secretary Hobbs. This has been great and very informative, and it is definitely my honor to have had this time with you, and I did my best not to fanboy out too much. And I just want to say thanks to all of you for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this, and if you did, we'll be posting new podcasts every month, so be on the lookout. Thanks again.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, please rate and subscribe on iTunes. See you next time.